Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. It's Monday. I swear to God, I smell something burning. It's one of those...
I don't smell anything.
Maybe it's one of those, like, you always read about those warning signs, like how to know you're having a seizure. It's like you smell burning hair or something. It's, if I start twitching uncontrollably, you'll take over, won't you? 503-733-2970. It's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland on Johnson 970. Thank you for coming along. Just a few moments, we'll talk to CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop. Now, we had to lie to CNN to get him on the show today because I've learned that, like, when every day CNN will post this prep sheet, what their reporters are talking about. And it's usually something uninteresting. And so you'll have to book them, like, under the auspices of talking about that story. But then when you get him on, you talk to him about whatever you want. Because he filed the story over the weekend about Robert Blake apparently making some big career comeback, which seems just sad. It's like when those, like, I was watching that E! True Hollywood story for Scotty Schwartz, who was that kid that was in The Toy. And he's the kid that gets his tongue stuck to the pole in A Christmas Story. Mm-hmm. And then he made The Toy with Richard Pryor and Jackie Gleason. And then he tried to make a porn film in which he could neither achieve nor sustain. And so so all he does now is he walks around. And Tim, you lived in L.A. You've seen these guys. All he does is walk around Hollywood with, like, a battered copy of The Toy 2 under his arm. And it's like Richard Pryor's dead. Jackie Gleason's dead. He's a failed porn star who's in his 40s now with a big gut and, you know, in a bald spot. And all he does is he walks from like, one studio to another with a battered copy of, like, you know, the sequel to The Toy under his arm, telling anybody with a camera that it's a hot property and that everybody's waiting to develop it. So comeback stories are always, they're always a little bittersweet. So we'll talk to Jim Roop about Robert Blake. What else? We got the Gary Baumgarten coming up. We'll talk about the Iraq War a little bit at the bottom of the hour. Next hour, Peter Carlin for the Oregonian is going to be on to talk about the Sopranos and the Shield. One last night, one tomorrow, et cetera, et cetera. So on and so forth. Let's make way at the city desk for Tim Riley.
From high atop the bottom of the coin tower in downtown Portland, Oregon, CBS Radio presents the City Desk Newsbeat. Tim Riley reporting. Our headlines, very quickly, the U.S. will not be threatened by Iran. We'll do everything we can possible to protect Israel. The president beats his chest. The battle for Iraq is not lost. The president knows more bloodshed must happen. Strange behavior by insomniacs taking prescription drugs, ranging from binge eating to having sex while asleep, have raised safety questions about anti-insomnia medications, like Ambien. Researchers in Minnesota are studying cases where insomniacs taking Ambien get up in the middle of the night, binged uncontrollably, then remembered nothing of their actions.
Now, see, you all, but see, the automatic assumption is that all those people are just doing crap and then denying it the next day. Yeah, they were off, like, stooping the neighbor, and then they claim that it's the drug. I will say this. A, I used to know a girl who would shop in her sleep. She lived across the street from a supermarket, like, it was like a foodway, like a 24-hour, you know, whatever. And she lived across the street, and she would wake up in the middle of, this is what she claimed, and I never witnessed it, but she claimed that this is true, that she would wake up at 2 a.m. in this, like, at the supermarket, pushing a shopping cart, dressed, well, like, slippers on, but, like, otherwise dressed, totally in the process of buying a whole bunch of crap. And she would just wake up at 2 in the morning, had no memory of getting there, no recollection of how she ended up in the supermarket, which is unnerving, to say the least, because then you start wondering, like, what else you're doing while you're half asleep. Let me also say this about Ambien. Ambien, and I don't take sleeping medication because it's like I took Loratab.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Loratab is, it's like a, it's a muscle relaxant or a pain reliever or something.
Maybe.
And I had one of those experiences. It's like my friend Derek who talked about doing heroin. And he said that the thing about heroin was he was at a party one time and a guy was like, "Do you want heroin?" And he was young. And he's like, "Sure, why not?" And he said that he took some, and he said it was the most frightening experience of his life because it was just the best thing in the history of the world. And he said it he never touched it again, never did it again, because it was so good that it frightened him. And that was my thing with Loratab. And Loratab is just like it's a prescription drug, but it's just like a pain reliever. It's not anything serious. I remember taking Loratab, though, and just thinking it was the best thing that God had ever, that if God had made anything better, he kept it for himself, you know? It's like when I took Ativan a couple years ago, same thing. I just took Ativan, and it was the best, man, it was the best 3 hours I'm ever going to have in this life. And so that's why I don't take any of that stuff. Ambien, though, is one of those drugs where just the name sounds so fancy, like you want to take it. You know what I mean? Ambien. It just sounds so soothing. It sounds so peaceful. So as soon as I get fired or, you know, I don't have anything to live for, inoperable brain tumor, whatever, I'm just going to load up on all kinds of prescription drugs, and that's all I'm going to do. I'm just going to sit around the house, and I'm going to take drugs and get high all day, every day, because they just sound fantastic. It's like when I was in school, I was reading this textbook description of a mescaline trip, and it made it seem like the best thing in the history of the world. Clearly, drugs are wrong, and you shouldn't do them or abuse your body, because it is the temple of Jesus. But someday, I'm going to become a massive junkie. I'm telling you right now. As soon as I have nothing to live for, it's just going to be drugs all day, every day, and whores. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, about 30 million in the U.S. take sleeping medications, according to the American Academy of Sleep Medication. By some counts, that is a 50% jump since the beginning of the decade.
Excellent.
So the trend continues.
Let's talk to our good friend Rob at the House of Rick. How are you, sir?
Hey, Rick.
What's up, man?
Hey, man. I got an Ambien story. I tried to quit smoking weed. That was a bad idea. And so I woke up one morning in the kitchen, and I had eaten about 4.5 cheese sandwiches. And I hate cheese sandwiches. So what's really weird is you wake up and you binge eat, and you don't know you're doing it, or you could just smoke weed and binge eat afterwards and forget it anyway.
Now, is this true that you took Ambien?
Yeah, I really tried to quit, and tried to quit smoking, and couldn't sleep for nothing. So I got a prescription and ate it for about a week, and I'm done with that.
Now what was it like when you would take an Ambien? Is, again, it's a sleeping aid, right?
That's, yeah.
It's for, and so you would take it, and you would wake up in the kitchen.
Eating.
You would wake up in the kitchen, and you just wake up halfway through a bite?
Halfway through a sandwich. Wake up, there's a cheese sandwich in my hand. I'm like, what am I? I hate cheese sandwiches.
That's fantastic.
Not so fantastic. What's the most messed up is it says you need 8 hours of sleep, and if you only get four, man, you are spun for the next 4 hours.
That's how it was with Ativan. About 3 years ago, I started taking Ativan. Because I was having these, I don't know, I talked about this before, I was having these horrific adrenaline attacks, these panic attacks. And they just, I don't know why they started. They just started for no readily apparent reason, and then they stopped. And but for a while, I was taking Ativan because, you know, the panic attacks, it's distracting. The thing about a panic attack is you can't get anything done because it feels like you're about to die. I mean, it feels like your heart is about to blow out the front of your chest, and you are, and I found out later.
You sure it wasn't thyroid cancer?
No, that's coming. That's down the line. I read an interview later with Jay Mohr from SNL, and Jay Mohr had the same problem, and he said that I found out this is common, that people who have panic attacks think that they're having heart attacks. That's the deal. And so anyway, I started taking Ativan to kind of get rid of the heart, you know, the panic attack symptoms. And it said, like don't screw with this stuff. Like, it's like, take this 8 hours before you have to do anything important or that requires responsibility at all. And I took it once before I had to go on the air. And I listened back to that show, and it's like, I'm drooling. Words are running together. I can't pronounce anything that's over two syllables. I mean, it sounded like I was on morphine.
It sounded like Clyde Lewis's drunk show.
It sounded like a... This is a Rick Emerson show. This is new news. I was not able to do anything at all. And so now the question is, did you take the entire prescription?
Oh, no. I cut myself off after about a week, man. I just didn't like it. I'd much rather walk around stone not
you,
doing.
Now, what did you dispose of that, or what do you have? Where's the rest of that Ambien
now? I don't
know.
You can call me after. Maybe we could work out a deal.
Okay. I wouldn't know anything about that, but you still got the same email address, right?
Yeah.
Fantastic. All right, there you go. Let's rock.
Give it to the children.
Yes. Rick, seriously, I took Ambien for this email. Says, I took Ambien for a short time for insomnia and ended up having sex with my husband while asleep. No kidding. I have no recollection of it. He said something about it the next day, and I had no clue what he was talking about. I was so happy to hear it wasn't just me. That's from Kimberly. There's some joke there. And if I was morning show material, I'd be able to come up with it. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. Our good friend Jim Roop from CNN Radio Los Angeles. How are you, sir?
I am well. Good afternoon, sir.
Thank you. You know, I know that at one point in the past we had an actual theme for you that wasn't the Starland Vocal Band, but I'll be damned if I can remember what it was.
I don't know.
Does anybody remember what Jim Roop's theme was?
No.
I have nothing. I know that everybody had their own theme and that we labored over it for a long time trying to find one for you. And then we did have it. And then when the intercom fired us, I backed up some stuff onto CD but not other stuff. And that's one of those things that I forgot to archive, and so now it's just completely expunged from my brain. I have no idea what it was.
Well, I thought that theme was in reference to your topic.
Oh, the Afternoon Delights?
Yeah.
No, that's just sort of my go-to. Whenever I can't think of a song for something, it's Afternoon Delight. That's just the default go-to song in my head. So before we talk about this Robert Blake thing, I saw that you... Tell me the story that happened in L.A. where there's... what, two guys in the L.A. Marathon that just dropped dead yesterday?
Well, three guys dropped of a heart attack. Two of them died, a retired sheriff's deputy and an active LAPD detective. So that's a rough business running those marathons. I've run several. I didn't run this year's, thank goodness. This one was a deadly one.
And so how long is the L.A. Marathon?
26 miles.
Yeah, see, I don't understand. There's something wrong with people who enjoy running.
Well,
you know?
I ran it raising money for various causes.
Of course.
I don't know. It's kind of fun. I'm a runner. I run regularly, 3 to 10 miles, 3 to 6 miles a day.
You're kidding me. You do that every single day. You do that.
Yeah, it's a chance to get to your, you know, you're by yourself. You just kind of get your brain thinking, and you don't have to drive to a gym or anything. You got a half hour, 45 minutes, slap on a pair of shoes, and go run around the block.
Faster than driving in traffic.
No, and again,
especially there.
And I don't run. I mean, well, especially in L.A. And see, now I bicycle every day. I bicycle to and from work.
See, that's smarter because you don't ruin your knees.
See, that's what I'm talking about. It's like I don't, and you know, and plus I've discovered that everyone in the world hates joggers, and I don't know why, but it's one of those things. Joggers are one of those groups of people that is sort of disliked by everybody
else.
I'll
tell you why. Because joggers, with the exception of myself, think they have the right of way no matter where it is.
Yeah,
joggers refuse to look left or right when they're crossing a street. They just think, since they're being healthy and you're driving a smog-emitting vehicle, that they're, you know, well above you, and how dare you even get close to hitting them?
Well, now, see, bicyclists are that way here in Portland. See, you probably don't have this in Los Angeles, but in Portland, we got all the, because this place is just packed with hippies, you know? It's packed with a bunch of granola eaters. And so once a month, there's this critical mass group, they're called. And it's these jackholes that get out there on their bicycle, and they block all the bridges and all the roads trying to stick it to the man, you know?
Oh.
As though the man is a guy who's stuck in rush hour traffic. The man just controls everything from a secret bunker somewhere. You know, the man isn't on the highway.
The man takes a helicopter.
That's what I'm talking about.
I got hit by a car riding a bike in Van Nuys once.
Really?
Yeah.
The guy
kept going.
I had a guy.
That's the way it goes in Van Nuys, you know that.
Yeah.
Van Nuys, where life, the mean streets of Van Nuys, where life is cheap. I almost got pasted by a guy coming around a corner the other day. The guy blew right through a red light and it just about killed me.
Hey,
so
you wear that Lycra crap with the banana in your back pocket?
I'm sorry?
Do you, when you ride your bike?
Are you talking about the biking shorts?
Yeah.
Oh, God, no, I don't want to be showing the whole world my junk. I don't, screw that, hell no. And I don't, and not only that, but I hold in disdain those who do. Like, when you see those bicycle guys, and it's, the worst are the guys who have the shorts that then matches the sort of spandexy Lycra shirt. Do you know what I mean? Like, they got a whole ensemble that they're wearing. I don't know. Screw that.
Well, you wear a helmet, correct?
Yeah, I put on a helmet. It's just me. It's just a black T-shirt and my Chuck Taylors. That's the same way, same thing I wear everywhere else in my life. So,
none
of that. Hey, Robert Blake.
Yeah.
So,
he's ready to go back to acting.
He's ready. Stage of triumphant comeback.
He's ready.
He's 103 years old, or 100 and how old is Robert
Blake?
He's
70.
Yeah.
He's 70 years old, but, and looks every bit of it.
Yeah.
He and I wish you were with us during that trial, because he and I got to do a couple of tussles outside the courthouse.
Really? Was he thinking he was gonna give you a bunch of fives, gonna teach you a lesson?
One point, I guess I got a little too close to him, trying to get him to answer a question. He says, "Don't crowd me." I said, "What are you going to do, take me to dinner?"
Oh, well, that's a good one. I like that.
That's what I'm talking about.
He didn't like that. He didn't like that at all.
So
I got to a few of those on the steps of the courthouse.
Now, is Robert, is he a tough guy in real life?
He's a very small guy, very small, very thin, very frail. He talks big. I would imagine at one point, you know, he could take care of himself pretty well. We've all seen the, you know, the Beretta episode of Beretta. You know, we've all seen those. But now he's just a little old man.
And so what is he?
But he's funny as hell. I mean, he really is.
Well, and he's working on what? He's working on some ranch, or
yeah, he calls himself a stable boy. He's been exercising some Arabian horses on a ranch owned by a friend of his, and
all right.
So he's been spending his days there.
And he's plotting his triumphant return to what exactly?
Acting. He wants to get back to acting. He wants to act and dance and sing and the whole deal. He's just ready to leave this legacy for Rosie, his daughter.
Uh-huh.
He'll say that, but then when you ask him about her, he gets all upset at you.
Well, you know, I had this idea last week about the Neverland Ranch, that the California ought to just annex that,
right,
and then make it into a tourist attraction. And then they get rid of Jackson, and then they pay off the debt. Here's another idea. Okay, because you guys in California, it's just packed with celebrity criminals. And especially criminals who've been acquitted, right? I mean, you got O.J.
Well, he's in Florida now.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, he's still...
I understand.
You know, I'm just saying you guys ought to put together some sort of traveling stage show or some sort of, like, a musical review. You know what I mean? You got Robert Blake. Whatever happened to Phil Spector?
Oh, that's still going on.
He's...
I mean, that's not over yet. I mean, that trial, that's all still happening.
Him and his big Ludwig van Beethoven hair?
Yeah, and it changes from time to time, too. No, right. That thing is still... that's in process still.
Boy, you guys, it's one gigantic freak show down there, so... I'm telling you, you guys ought to, you put together some sort of, you know, like sort of your own sort of Branson, Missouri kind of thing, but it's just guys who've killed people and then been acquitted.
Yeah,
and
that then, would be one hell of a show.
Yeah, and then you could have like Scott Peterson via ISDN or something. You could beam him in via satellite.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, look, everybody thinks of California as just a place of, you know, a place filled with crazed nutballs anyway, and so this is where you capitalize
on. Would you separate it in acts like murderers first and then pedophiles? Second, and then other perverts, that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, you lead up to the murderers. They're sort of, the murderers are sort of the Bob Geldof. They're the headlining act of the whole thing. All you know right. what I mean? So, I'm telling you, it's that California's biggest export is and has always been and will continue to be culture. And in this case, crazed culture. And so you ought to suggest that to Robert Blake the next time he's not threatening.
If he wants to get back to acting, he can be a writer, too.
That's what I'm talking about. So, I mean, because doesn't he owe somebody like $30 million?
Jeez, I've missed you.
I'm just saying, these are the things. Look, this is why CBS Radio pays us the mediocre dollars.
They're getting their money's worth.
Yeah, doesn't he owe somebody like $30 million, though?
Yeah, he's been ordered by a civil jury to pay $30 million to the Bakley family after being found liable for finally Bakley's death, but... He filed for bankruptcy. They'll never see that money.
Do juries just giggle when they pass, when they have verdicts like that, and knowing that it... Because, like, O.J. never paid anybody anything, did he?
He's never paid a dime to anybody, no.
Yeah, I mean, they're just sort of novelty verdicts, right? They're just... It's like when you buy something and it says, you know, novelty purposes only, not for actual use with whatever. It's like when you buy an edible condom and it says, you know, not for, this is not for purposes of birth control. These verdicts are just sort of, they're just for amusement purposes only.
It's a nerny, nerny, nerny thing, you know. we found you liable.
That's the journalistic term for it.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right, my friend, we'll talk to you soon.
All righty, sir.
All right, Jim Roop in Los Angeles. There you go. And in the meantime, we'll try to find out. I'm trying to remember what the hell theme song he even had, because it's...
Was it the O.C.? Was it California?
No, because the O.C. wasn't on at that point, I don't think.
Yeah, it was. It's been on for...
When we were over at Fisher?
Uh-huh.
Maybe.
I remember watching it, because I didn't have to be at work till 11.
You sure? Maybe it was... Was it California Love? That, you know, that Tupac...
California Love.
That, you know, the Tupac thing, the Dr. Dre?
I don't think so.
Somebody, if you remember what the hell theme song... We used for Jim Roop. I don't know why. It's like
California
some,
Love.
I thought it was something with California. I thought we went through a whole series of California songs.
California Dreamin'?
It wasn't California Dreamin'. It wasn't I Love L.A., I don't think. Or was it?
Oh.
Wait, hold on.
I think it might be.
Rick Emerson Show. Who's this?
Not too bad. I think, wasn't it I Love L.A.?
What, by Randy Newman? Was
Randy
it?
Newman.
I think it was.
You know, maybe. I don't know. I love L.A. I've grown, for some reason, I've grown incapable of singing it like anybody did Trey Parker. So I sing everything like a man song now, but I love L.A. And then we went through, and that's all I know of that song. That and the fact that the Peter Jacobson guy uses it as like a golf jingle now. That's all. All right, Chris, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Who's this?
Hey, it's Doug.
Hey, Doug, how can I help you?
Derek, but I'm pretty sure if you go back to all your backlogs and your website, you can find what the Jim Roop theme is.
Which is what?
I think it's the I Love L.A. song.
Okay, so it was I Love L.A. by Randy Newman.
Yeah, I think it is. Now that you sung a couple lyrics, I'm pretty sure it is.
Okay, all right, I'll have to go dig that up somewhere then. All right, thank you, Doug.
All right, thank you.
All right, there you go. That's that. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Let's break here. We'll come back. And we've got Gary Baumgarten from CNN Radio coming up, going to talk about Iraq. More from Tim Riley at the City Desk. And coming up later on, Peter Carlin from the Oregonian will be here. We've also got today's top five most influential metal albums of all time. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland on Johnson 970. You stay right there. We'll be right back. Morrison Show live from beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon. Thank you for coming by. Johnson 970, a proud part of the CBS Radio family. It's 503-733-2970, 503-733-2970. In just a few moments, we'll talk to Tim Riley at the City News Desk. Gary Baumgarten from CNN Radio will be joining us as well. Later on, Peter Carlin from The Oregonian is going to talk about last night's Sopranos and tomorrow night's installment of The Shield, which should be fantastic. Forrest Whitaker, who's been the he's been sort of the big bad, as they call it, this season on The Shield, has been fantastic. So we'll do that. All of this email to get to, and I just, somebody was, my cell phone was just ringing out there in the hallway a minute ago, which is, I'm waiting for a phone call about something during the show, which, although I do not have the, I don't have the same plan that you do anymore, though, I don't think. Didn't you switch cell plans?
Yeah, I switched it to be cheaper.
Yeah, and how's that working out for you?
Not so much.
$250.
Oh, my God.
I couldn't. Here's the only time I've ever had a cell phone bill that high. It's because Laura and I, because we signed up at the same time on the same plan, or so we thought. Like, is that thing where, you know, they gave us the contract and we're, like, signing and everything. And we thought that they were giving us both the same stuff. And it turns out that we got unlimited long distance, but it was only unlimited long distance on my phone, not hers.
Oh, no.
And she completely thought it was unlimited long distance on both. And so she would have, and because she's a much better child than I am, you know, in terms of relationship to her parents, she's a much better offspring than I am. I never thought to my family. Half my family could be dead for all I know, and I wouldn't, I'd have to wait to read about it online or to be notified, you know, like by an executrix or something. I would never even know. But she calls her parents once a week, every Sunday for like 90 minutes and talks to them in Provo, Utah. And so weeks and weeks and weeks go by, and then we get the bill, and it's like $740.
Oh, my gosh.
It's just some because they're old, so you have to call them early in the day. Like, you can't
wait for 9
p.m. You can't wait for free calling hours because, you know, to be calling, you know, they roll up everything. I think they turn the phones off in Provo at 9 p.m. And so she would have to call her parents in Provo it's like 7 hours a month or something in peak hours. And so we got the phone bill, and it was like $700. And we found out it was just me, which, of course, the irony is I don't ever call anybody. Like, I don't ever, I'd be happy if people didn't even have my cell phone number. The happiest time in my life was before cell phones got to the point they are now, where you capture everybody's phone call. Do you know what I mean? Because to the best of my knowledge, there's no way to call anonymously on a cell phone, is there? Like, if I'm just going to call...
I don't know.
Because, you know, there was that Star 67 feature or whatever it is on your home phone, so one would ever have your number, which is fantastic. And those were halcyon days. Back when I would have a cell phone, and I would never give the number to anybody. So I could make outgoing calls, but no one was ever able to find me. But now it's like you call somebody and they've immediately got your number, and then they're going to call you all the time. And if it's a number you don't recognize, especially now that we got the job, if it's a phone, I always got to answer it. Because I know the one time I won't answer it, it's going to be some guy from CBS, and he's going to be all annoyed that I'm not around. So I'm always having to answer it. But so I didn't have any long distance on my phone because there was no point. And so we completely got bent over and horked on our cell phone bill the very first month that we had it, and we totally had to go get it restructured. But other than that, unless you're just sitting and calling like the time and temperature in Swaziland or something, like, I can't imagine. Like, have you called them and asked the $250 was generated from?
I've been thinking about it. Okay.
For what period of cell phone usage is this $250?
It's from March. The last time I paid my bill was March. February 11th.
So this is 1 month.
This is 1 month.
$250.
So what I'm thinking, though, is
maybe they didn't hang up during a call.
I don't know. Well, I have this thing called, you know how they have, like, MyTunes? Like, I got this new phone that I don't really know what it does. It has all these, like, fancy schmancy.
Well, you have a Razer.
Yeah, I have a Razer phone.
Yeah.
Got it for free. Oh, that was another story. Anyway, so got it for free. Then they have all these things like MyTunes and stuff, and you can download songs. And it says $1.99 for...
I'm sensing bait and switch.
For the use of a song.
Is that $1.99 once?
I thought it was when you set the ring, like once a month or something.
Mm.
But if that's not the case,
I'm suspecting you may have misread a part of your ringtone agreement.
I just don't even know what to do. I mean, I'm like, I got this huge tax return, and now I have to pay $200 to hear Kelly Clarkson since you've been gone 100 times.
It's what you get for putting Kelly Clarkson on your phone,
you know what?
By the
That's
way.
That's not very nice.
All right, let's we'll talk about this more here in just a skosh, as well as Tim Riley, the City News Desk. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome from New York. Oh, for the love of God. Oh, wait, hold on. Hold on. Oh, did I get rid of my Baumgarten sounder?
We'll find you another one.
Sweet holy God
you
almighty.
You are on the ball today.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now from CNN Radio, New York City, our good friend Gary Baumgarten. How are you?
I love New York City.
Thank you. Thanks, Gary. I appreciate it. Now, I don't know where it is. I've mislaid it somewhere. I've put it somewhere.
Man, I love that, too.
I got to find it. I put it in a separate folder somewhere, and now it's lost to me for all eternity. How's life in the big city, my friend?
It's pretty good. You know, it's hard to believe this is the first day of spring, though. It's so chilly.
Is it the first day of spring?
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I
believe it, isn't it?
I never pay attention to anything. I left the house this morning, and we've had the most bizarre. I'm going to sit and talk about the weather. We've had the most bizarre winter here, though, where it was like the driest winter on earth.
Uh-huh.
And so, because it was the driest winter, and I know this is gripping for everybody who's like not right in Portland, but because it was the driest winter on earth, it just means that like the pollen count is already just off the charts.
Really?
And so all I have to do is walk out the front door of my house, and all my orifices begin to swell shut. That's all it is, man. I walk outside, and immediately it's like I'm a mole entering the sunlight for the first time. My eyes are immediately just like tiny swollen slits. It's fantastic.
And it killed off all the azaleas in my front yard planter too.
Oh my goodness.
So it's a tragedy all around, Gary.
It's really a tragedy. We should play some funeral music.
Yeah. All right. So, well, so this is, correct me if I'm wrong. So is it today that we entered year four of this Iraq war?
Yesterday, actually, was the third anniversary.
All right. And so, we talked a little bit about this on Friday, but I mean, I don't know to what extent you can speak about this simply because I don't know to what extent. Unless you're there every day seeing it on the ground, you can get the straight scoop. But, I mean, there seems to be sort of two groups on this. There is the everything in Iraq is going wrong, and everything is just a disaster, and things are imploding, and it's chaos and looting and rioting and pillaging and raping, and nothing's getting done. And all it is that Americans are getting shot and killed and maimed and wounded for the service of Halliburton. And then the other side is, No. People are running free in the streets, and children are playing with, kites, and kittens are playing with balls of string, and women are voting, and it's becoming a fantastic place with a phenomenally effective infrastructure. And I don't know, is either one of those right?
You're right. I'm not there, so I don't know. But I can tell you from talking to the people who came back, the service people who I interviewed, it's probably a little bit of both. Both is probably accurate. There is a lot of death, destruction, chaos. A lot of it, they say, is coming from the outside. The insurgency involves a lot of foreign nationals, not necessarily just Iraqis, but there are Iraqis involved as well. But there's also some improvement of the infrastructure. They believe that there's some hope on the part of the people. They believe that there is a move toward democracy. They point to the two elections that were recently held, where so many people risked their lives to walk to the polls and vote in large numbers, which is, in numbers that we haven't seen here in the United States, where we, I guess, take for granted.
Well, let me talk about that for a second. So, I really should know these things, but I'm just a dumb American, which means that I spend like 1/100th of my brain power worrying about anything that doesn't directly involve me. And so, when we have those elections in Iraq, now, were these like actual re-elections like
it's
we have
interim governments
here
that were established?
Right.
So, you don't feel bad because it's very confusing. It's not, okay, there was an election, it's all over, there's
right.
somebody in charge, and the Americans can get out. It doesn't work that way. They're doing it in like an incremental steps, which makes it difficult and frustrating, and for people who want to see this happen, they want to see it happen, everybody wants instant gratification and all that, so, but the point is, I don't think that it's all one way or the other just from talking to the fellows. I'll tell you what, after meeting with them, and I've had no desire to go there and cover this conflict because it's obviously very dangerous for reporters. I mean, reporters are at a premium, when they go there. But I kind of would like to go there and tell the story of the attempts to rebuild the infrastructure of Iraq. I mean, if in fact there is a major effort by the United States government to do this, I agree with them that it's a story that ought to be told. And they believe that reporters who have attempted to tell the story, got the story spiked, never saw air or never saw publication.
So now, I remember somebody who was very similar to George W. Bush saying that we didn't want to be an occupying force, and we didn't, what was the phrase? That we didn't want to engage in nation building.
Mm-hmm.
And not to be overtly cynical about it, but now we're coming up on, you know, going to be the fourth year there. And I mean, is anybody anywhere talking about like an exit date, a vague timeline, a general sense of where we may be getting out of there?
Well, the government says no, they don't want to put a timeline because that would force a deadline whether they were ready to move out or not, whether the Iraqis were ready to take over or not. And then they would either be forced to not meet the deadline or meet the deadline and turn it over to an ill-prepared populace. So that's why they claim they're not offering a deadline. And, you know, what's kind of sad about it is they're talking about reducing the troops, but just as they're doing that, then comes word about a week ago that they would have to temporarily increase the number of troops there. But what really struck me is, you know, you hear the population, people talking in the one direction, you know, let's get these American service people out of there.
Right.
And then when you talk to these guys, they say they're ready to go back and complete the mission if called. I just have to say that we have to listen to them as well. I mean, we don't have to agree politically that that's the course that the nation ought to take, but I think we owe it to the people who we send there to put their lives on the line to at least listen to their perspective. And that's why I found it so heartening, the opportunity to talk to them, because as we discussed on Friday, here in New York especially, it's a very, very democratic area,
right,
extremely anti-war. All the advocates here are against the war, with the exception of the United States delegation to the United Nations. And even when you try to interview people on the street, you're really hard-pressed, right, to try to get a balance in response. And so when I heard that the 69th Infantry Battalion of the New York National Guard just returned from Iraq was going to lead the St. Patrick's Day Parade, I asked for permission to interview some of their representatives, not just about the honor of leading the parade, which I did talk about on the air, but also their perspectives about how the war is going, because you want to hear it from the people who are there.
So final question, since you are in New York, and this is the thing that's going to come up more and more and more in the future, so you mentioned the New Yorkers, so the populace are so adamantly opposed to the war and all that.
Yes.
Do you, Tim and I were talking earlier today about all these the people who voted for the war, and they're going to have to try to, you know, to cover their asses when election time comes around. Do you guys get the sense there that it's a fait accompli that Hillary's going to run in 2008?
Oh, now that's a good question. I was wondering where you were going with that.
Oh, no, because it's going to be the best day of my life.
I don't think it's a fait accompli necessarily, but I will say without reservation that she's running two campaigns at once.
Yeah.
As she runs for re-election, she's obviously running to position herself to run for president.
Are the people in New York going to turn on her if she does that?
I don't think so. But the question is not whether she could gain support in New York. The question is whether she could gain support elsewhere.
That's going to be the greatest day of my life, by the way, when she announces that she's running for president. Because from that day on, show prep will be pointless. There'll be no need. You just come in and you just open the phones and you say Hillary. And that's all it is, my friend. That's going
to
be
it. Well, it'll sure cause people to want to call in and speak their mind one way or the other, because she is a lightning rod. There's no question about that.
It's going to be good times. We will talk again soon, my friend. Gary Baumgarten, CNN
Bye-bye.
Radio, New York City. There you go. All right. It's 503-733-2970. All right. During that live, Gary Baumgarten was talking about the Iraq and Hillary Clinton and great affairs that affect all of us. And Tim and I were becoming increasingly entranced by the fact that Sarah was poking at something in a food dish over there,
like it was served by Halliburton.
Seriously, we looked over. I was trying to give all my brain power to Gary Baumgarten, but Sarah's got this food tray, and she's got a really sharp knife, and it was like you were doing cellular dissection over there,
like a finicky cat.
Seriously,
I didn't judge how hot it was, and I lost half of my part of my fork in my food, and I'm really hungry, but
is
I don't want
a plastic fork.
Yeah, so it's a clear plastic fork. So I was trying to find the
bits. So clear plastic fork actually broke off inside your food.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Was it found?
No, not yet.
So it's still in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Excellent. Good times. Ladies and gentlemen, let's go to the city news desk with Tim Riley.
top to bottom of the coin tower in downtown Portland, Oregon, CBS Radio presents the City Desk Newsbeat. Jim Riley reporting. So recapping, the U.S. will not be threatened by Iran. It will do everything possible to protect Israel. The battle for Iraq is not lost. The president knows more bloodshed will happen. They're not really having a civil war or having one that anybody could talk about.
All right, and the public was in no danger at any time. It's always good just to throw that in.
Meanwhile, we have hazardous traffic conditions reported in South Dakota. We haven't checked in lately to find out what's happening, so let's talk to Colonel Dan.
The visibility is good, and there is small amounts of precipitation, snow, in the form of snow in various areas of western South Dakota. But the thing that they're encountering now are very slippery roads.
All right, there you go. Thank you.
So it's snow, kind of like snow.
Just in case you're planning a trip to South Dakota today.
Time for the Clown Watch.
Here's your Clown Watch from Monday in the Rick Emerson Show.
Well, the only thing missing was a tiny getaway car jammed full of his friends. And maybe soaks or water spray from a weapon. A man wearing a clown mask, red nose, and a bright red wig, and wrapped in a brown rain poncho, try to visualize that, held up a north side bank with a toy gun, police said. Then he tried to make his escape on a bicycle. This happened in Chicago. This happened at the Chase Bank as the clown was finishing the heist the cop walked in. The officer chased the clown down the street, pushed him off the bicycle to make the arrest. This clown literally stuck up a bank, said the police department.
You got to give him credit, though, for wanting to be consistent about it, though. That, I mean, he didn't have, like, a regular getaway car. He didn't have, like, a helicopter. He went the whole clown. Gave the whole clown 9 yards and brought a bicycle there.
Apparently, the money was strewn on the floor and then looked up into the eyes of the bank teller. Apparently, the clown backed out of the bank and called the North District to report the robbery. Meanwhile, the clown ran out of the bank, hopped on his bike, and tried to make his escape with cash and a fake gun that looked like an Uzi. A clown with an Uzi.
I wonder if they told the clown, don't try anything funny.
An 18-year member, the department chased him down, calling for him to stop. Finally, the cop tackled him. The man was in custody, and the FBI said they'll press charges.
Yeah, but I think there ought to be some sort of a grading system, like a point system, you know, for what your punishment is. You know, like, you're just some guy, and you go in, and you start kneecapping somebody with a tire iron, you know, and you're asking to clear out their register. You know, I mean, there's nothing to be... But, I mean, if you're willing to put in the effort, you're willing to take the time and add a little zing by going in as a clown on a bicycle, it seems like that ought to count for something. There ought to be, you know, that ought to be a mitigating circumstance when it comes to the sentencing.
Meanwhile, Fox is loading up on animated comedies. The Simpsons and King of the Hill, the network has ordered 2 more seasons of The Simpsons. Of course, get this, 18th and 19th season.
Jesus, God.
And one more for King of the Hill. The show's 11th. Well, that's been around a while,
King
too.
Of the Hill, man, you know what King of the Hill is? King of the Hill is like the collective soul of television sitcoms. I mean, collective. So I was listening to some, some radio station, and they were doing, it was like a Sunday morning infomercial, and it was for a Best of Collective Soul CD. It was like Collective Soul, the definitive collection, and I heard it as I was flipping by. And Collective Soul is one of those bands that you don't really think about ever, ever. Like, do you know anybody that identifies as a big Collective Soul fan? No, you don't. No one does.
No.
It's like being a big Sugar Ray fan. It's just sort of pointless. But then when they play all of their songs back to back, and you realize that there's like 15 different Collective Soul songs that you know, word for word. So it is with King of the Hill. You don't really realize the King of the Hill has been on so long, but it's just always there. It's faithful, dependable, reliable. You know, it is never groundbreaking, but it's never bad. It's always there, and you can, like, if you need something to watch for 22 minutes of your life, King of the Hill is always there. As opposed to The Simpsons, which is what, is it 18th, you said?
Yep.
I mean, and I'm such of two minds about The Simpsons. I mean, on the one hand, that show, and I think I speak for all of us when I say that I hate to say this, but the Simpsons hasn't been really funny for years. I mean, The Simpsons is, I'm sure that it's, I mean, and I quit watching a couple of years ago, and I'm sure it's still amusing, but I mean, it really is just a shadow of its former self. I mean, just losing its punch like an aging show Liston, you know, but on the other hand, you feel so bad for those guys. Who could ever make the decision to cancel The Simpsons? Like, who could say that? It's like unplugging your grandmother or something, you know what I mean? Sure, she soils herself and she reeks of Bengay, but I mean, she's your grandmother. You can't pull the plug. So, I'm glad that I'm not the guy at Fox who has to make the decision every year about whether to renew The Simpsons, because you don't want to be the guy who cancels that. They'll put your head on a pipe.
Well, get this. By the time it hits the 2000-2008 season, it'll hit its 400th episode, meaning it'll be in syndication
till all of us die.
Yeah, no, I mean, no, it's going to be there forever. Yeah. All right.
Let's see. Oh, and after a 2-month hiatus, production of King of the Hill recently resumed after new deals were sealed with principal behind-the-scenes talent, including showrunners, executive producers, and the voiceover actor Mike Judge.
Excellent.
Because King of the Hill has been the subject of frequent preemptions of Fox's NFL football coverage, the network has enough fresh episodes for the rest of the season. The show is slated to return for its 11th season in January.
That's fantastic. That is the upside, by the way, of airing on Fox, is that there's always a new episode just around the corner because the old episode has always been preempted by some crap. I mean, I remember when Arrested Development, and we're going to be saying this for the next couple of weeks, and then hopefully we'll have worked our way out of it. But Arrested Development, that whole saga is yet another thing that we missed. We were off the air when that whole thing happened about Arrested Development, where first it was canceled, and then it wasn't canceled, and then it was going to be on HBO, and then it wasn't. I don't know what the word is now. I guess theoretically it's still going to Showtime, but we missed that entire finale. And I remember after that Arrested Development, they ran those final four episodes in a 2-hour block. And I remember reading an analysis somewhere that said less than 50% of the Arrested Development episodes aired in their actual time slot. It was something like 47% of the episodes aired where it was supposed to air. And the rest were just sort of, you know, just sort of scattered around like so much corn feed. So, anyway. All right.
That's it for now. Right. We'll be back.
Should I be taking
should
be on to the phones here? Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Who's this? Hello.
Hello?
Hi, who's this?
Hey, this is Dimitri.
Dimitri, how can I help you on this fine Monday?
I didn't get a chance to welcome you guys back. I got locked up on Monday, and I just got out recently.
Like in the big house, in the Hooskow.
Yeah. Not even the new big house that they can't afford to keep open.
It was in that prison of tomorrow. Where were you locked up?
Washington County.
Washington County. Is that a good place to be? Have you been locked up in many places? Can you speak?
That was the first time.
Can I ask what it was for?
Huh?
Can I ask what it was for? Why you got locked up?
It was a probation violation.
And so, well, this is like peeling an onion. So now, what were you on probation for?
Well, I have a son, and I wasn't supposed to see his mom.
Oh,
and his mom
it's one of those
kind of
stories.
Manipulated the deal, and I got in trouble for seeing her.
Wait, so this is for beating her?
Just seeing her.
Seeing her. I was going to say, attention advertisers, you two can. So it was like a restraining order thing?
Well, sort of. She put a restraining order, then the courts took over and said, yeah, we're going to put it on and stuff like that.
So they ran into each other at Cherry's or something.
So, all right. And so then you were on probation. You went and you saw the kid and you weren't supposed to?
No, I could see the kid. It was just, I wasn't supposed to be anywhere near her and
I see. So she was just supposed to drop the kid off on a stoop somewhere, and you were supposed to come by and pick him up?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
And my probation, PO doesn't like me very much, and she just basically said that I saw her all the time. And
yes.
So
you got locked up when?
Monday.
Monday. So what time
Friday
Monday?
I got back.
What time Monday?
Like 3.
3? Well, see, you could have heard the show.
But I was on the bus. I took the bus from Portland all the way out to Washington County, and then right when I got there, they locked me up.
Oh, was this the regular bus or the prison bus?
Just the regular TriMet bus.
So the regular but were they waiting for you?
They were basically ready for me to come in, and so I went to court.
Oh, I see. So it was a scheduled appearance. Okay, so it wasn't like you were to Fred Meyer in the sporting goods section, and they took you down like Tommy Lee Jones style. So they just said, like, show up so we can put you in the hole.
Yeah.
All right. So now, how long were you in the... This is just like the county lockup?
Yeah, I was in there for a week, but I would have still been in there if I didn't ask, like, when am I supposed to get out? The guards didn't even know I was really in there.
They just forgot.
I was like Guantanamo Bay.
Totally. Did they hook a car battery up to your junk, by the way?
No.
You were just sitting in there?
Yeah, I was in a psych ward, and the guards they're like, Larson, we didn't have a file for you in here. And then they're like, we'll let you go.
So if you hadn't piped up, you would have just been like sitting there for time immemorial. Forever. All right.
With some Lindy England or something.
Yeah, so seriously. Now that sounds like a dumb question, but is that like a bad place to be locked up?
It wasn't all that bad for me. That was a lot better than general population.
Yeah, it's a pretty modern.
I just sat there, slept, and read.
And so it's okay. So it's like a single cell thing, so that you're not having to share a cell with some big guy.
Well, the first 3 days I was there by myself, and then, like, they brought somebody else in, and they were pretty cool, and then another guy was in there, and then I left.
Okay, so now, but in general population, you'd be in a cell with a bunch of other dudes.
Yeah.
Now, is it? Now, is it in your experience? I mean, to whatever extent you can speak about this. Now, is a county lockup like a prison in that, like, you have to make? Do you have to have a show of force right away to let people know not to screw with you?
I don't know. I was in the psych ward, so everybody was all nuts.
So those guys are probably not going to be put off by any show of force anyway.
No, those are ladies singing show tunes in the middle of the night. So.
Yeah, excellent.
With a blonde wig and a red nose.
All right. Well, Dimitri, well, we hope you try to stay out of the lockup, man. We need our listeners.
Go talk to Clyde Lewis. He'll talk about your future.
Yes.
He's over there in Washington County himself.
Yes, Clyde Lewis can put you on the right path. Well, spread the word, but probably not to your ex-wife. That's going to work out badly. So spread the word to everyone but her.
Okay, I'm just glad that you guys are back. I was like ants and waiting for you guys to come back that whole time.
Well, you should have missed it. Maybe, who knows? Maybe, see, we probably got a large listening base there. They could have hooked you up with the radio, perhaps.
Yeah.
Yes, okay.
I'll meet you next time.
All right, well, yes, there's always the future. Dimitri, thank you.
Okay, bye.
All right, there you go. All right. 503. Sometimes you just don't know where to go with stuff. 503-733-2970.
503-733-2. What are you
going to do? You know how it is. Well, and it's like you totally have heard those stories a million times. Right? I'm not trying to diminish the guy's story. I'm sure it's a bad, bad scene. Yeah. But it's like there's really only three types of stories that lead you to, and then they locked me up, right? There's the, well, my old lady, and that's what that story was right there. There's the my old lady or my kid. Any story that starts with my old lady or starts with, well, my kid, you know that's...
It's a no-win situation.
There's the, well, a buddy and I were drinking. That's the other version of that story. A buddy and I were drinking. And, you know, and then the third version is, well, I got fired. You know, and that's where, like, they find the guy, like, burgling, like, a Les Schwab somewhere. And, you know, they're going to put him in the hole.
Stole all the free popcorn.
Yes. All right.
That's clearly a probation violation.
You know, these people calling for...
Washington County.
I guess Vancouver would be, I mean, if you got to be locked up, I would imagine that, like, Washington County, Clark County, these are probably the places where you want to be incarcerated. Do we have
and
to break?
And they're newer prisons.
Sarah, do we have to break? Are we behind?
Yes, we're behind two breaks.
All right. We'll be back after this. We've got Peter Carlin from the Oregonian coming. I'm going to talk about The Sopranos, going to talk about The Shield. We'll try to get to the bottom of Sarah's cell phone bill, by the way. We've got the top five coming up. Top five most influential metal albums of all time. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show, live from Portland right here on the CBS Radio family.
No romance.